Good morning, everyone. Hi. Sorry, we're gonna get started. We have a jam-packed hour, so we're gonna get kicked off here. So welcome to this morning's session. It is It Factor Emails, Wow Factor Bookings. We have three great presenters to talk with you this morning: Anna Pollak from Cornell, Jason Hilal from Sierra Club, and Michelle Bell from the National World War II Museum. So, just a few housekeeping items. The session is being video recorded, so there will be access to it after the event. And you'll see surveys on your table. If you could please fill them out and hand them in at the end, the feedback is greatly appreciated. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Anna Pollak. She is the Associate Director of Engagement Initiatives at Cornell, where she has primary responsibility for the Cornell Alumni Association travel program. By using email marketing since mid-2015, she's grown participation by 40%, grown revenues by 51%, and creatively leveraged that success to benefit the Cornell Alumni Magazine with nearly $80,000 in print ad revenue over 3 years. So without further ado, Michelle. Or I'm sorry, Anna.
Good morning. How many travel planners here are using email already to promote your tours? Cool. And how many of you feel like it's really successful? You're seeing bookings come from those emails? Okay. All right. And how many travel operators are wishing that your planners would use more email? Cool. And I want you to think about this through the session. I want you to think about what you'd be willing to do to incentivize your planners to use the email. Chris Anderson, according to Chris Anderson of TED Talks, when a presenter shares her message with an audience, she actually has a sort of shape in her brain that represents the neuron structure of her thoughts. And by the end of the presentation, if she's successful, each one of you could have the same shape in your brain. So we could go from this to this. And what I want to share with you is that emails are the same way. They're not mass communication devices. So if you're just using your email as a communication piece, you're really missing the boat. It's actually a shared offering that you can give to your audience. So it's not just a piece of crammed up information like a brochure might be. It's more of an enticement. So how do you create that artisanal gift to give to people via email? Sure. Okay. Trying to poach my audience. Everybody, this is Harriet on your left. Harriet called me in early 2015. She was upset about a few things that had happened on a tour she'd taken with us, and they were all things that I had no control over. And she, was telling me in retrospect, and I felt really sad, and we talked for a good while. And then I was nervous to talk with her further. I steered her to books because that's what I talk about when I'm nervous. And she's a reader. She gave me a reading list. And by 90 minutes in, I thought, okay, we're done. Bye, Harriet. But we actually ended up becoming really good friends. We had a few more conversations over the course of the next few months. She told me about all of her previous travel with my organization and others, different vendors and operators that she loved and ones that she didn't. And then she called me in mid-August 2015, and she said, "Anna, I want to go to Morocco with you guys, but I know there are only five people on that January 2016 tour. What are you going to do about it?" And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't disappoint Harriet again. I can't face it. So I thought, what do I have left in my toolbox? They've sent the brochure. I guess I'm going to do an email. And we'd never been successful with email. We'd sent some. Sometimes we would get the responses in all caps. People were upset. "Why are you sending me this crap, from Cornell? What does this have to do with Cornell?" was a big complaint. And so I'm sitting at my desk Googling how do you make a good email. You can do it. Captivating subject line, not too much text. You know, you want it to be stylish. That's all really important. But more important, what I would say is to have your sincerity, to channel that feeling that we all have when we talk about a specific destination and try to put that into your email. How do you do that? It's the same feeling you get when you're giving someone hungry or chilly a bowl of warm soup, you know, or a key to the future for a young person, or maybe some encouragement for someone who's having a down day. But it's email, and we're like, oh, God, you know, we send a lot of emails to one-on-one, but when you're thinking about you're addressing maybe hundreds of thousands of people on behalf of your organization, it becomes a little daunting. And then behind you, you have your email marketing team, right? And the communications director who's like, you can only send one, you get one a year, and you know, it better be good because we're going to be looking at you, and unsubscribes are too high, you're in big trouble. So before you know it, it's a brochure because you were like, oh my God, I have to put every single detail in my email. I don't want questions. You know, that's going to create problems, all this stuff. And you've got this bizarrely cumbersome piece that it's not suited for the platform. So that day in August, I needed to help Harriet, and I didn't have a choice. I didn't have time to think about jamming up my email with all of those details. I was like, I need a fresh look. You know, what am I going to do? So I scanned the internet for a free photo. I got this guy. He originally had dog tags. I cropped it up. So we're talking about Morocco. I'm like, I need it to look fresh, but it's got to kind of resonate with the destination. There's a rosary over there. I think I cropped that out. But I thought, this looks a little bit fresh. It's not our normal traveler. It doesn't represent the age demographic. But I was thinking, oh, we always want to feel younger, smarter, richer, you know, when we get advertised to. So, and then I was like, it's Cornell. I love books. I'm going to put a quote on. So I grabbed this quote from Jack Kerouac. I edited it a little bit for the audience because, you know, I'm like worried, oh, they're going to get mad. It's a little risky, but it turned out that it was August and everybody else was on vacation. It was a Friday. And the only person in the building but me was the email person. And so I called her and I'm like, hey, Deb, remember when you hosted my trip? I'm calling in a favor. So could you run this email for my travel program tomorrow, Saturday? And could you send it to everybody? Just, you know, everybody. She's like, Anna, that's like 225,000 people. And I'm like, yeah, I want them all. So, okay, this is Harriet in Morocco. And she was so happy. Okay, she had such a good time. She was quoted in Cornell Alumni Magazine as saying, if she could take one moment to her grave, it would be sitting on the sand dune singing the alma mater with our group. And that was a group made up of 16 people that booked via the email. So it really moved me. I mean, we get a lot of email. All the time we can feel like this because we get a lot of crappy email. And, you know, I'm just tired of that. And I bet you are too. I want emails that make me feel like this. And that's the kind of email that I try to put together for our audience because planners are engagement professionals. We don't only staff these tours and plan them. We're staffing events, reunion, homecoming. We're talking to alumni. We know many of them. So when we're putting together emails, remember the relationships that you have and how much you care about them, and get your alumni to say, you know, that your emails transport them, no matter what generation they come from. How do you do it? Dolly. You know, this is another thing to think about. Like, what does Dolly have when she sings a song, especially a slow song? She's telling you a story. and she's pulling you in because she cares about it. It's like this glamorous Dolly thing, but she's probably growing that story straight out of her heart and giving it to you because she cares. Our emails at Cornell are not slick. I'm not a professional graphic designer. I throw on the banner, gives me some credibility. I have a nice photo maybe, you know, hopefully. And then what I do is I link the Learn More goes to our brochure on our website. It's a little bit of text. It's really simple. And here's one we did for Antarctica. And this one, it didn't glean many, many bookings. But I want you also to think that if you get someone writing back and saying, you know what, I always wanted to go there, or I went there, that's also engagement. So from my perspective, that works as well. Our, of course, operators love the bookings, and that's great. It's really fun to get people out. But you know what? It's also important that when you're addressing a huge audience like 225,000, not everyone there is going to be in that subset of caring about or able to travel. And for us, we need to consider how to not offend people. And so giving them something that feels kind of cool, makes them smile a little bit, reminds them of something that they care about, is very important. So obviously, after I booked the Morocco trip, I talked about it to everyone. I told everyone. I was like, hey, you know what? I booked up the trip from email. And I told my vice president, for sure. And I told email people. And I said things like, you know what? We had a couple reserve who are in their 30s. Ha ha. And guess what else? We had a couple register who are in their 20s. He he he. And I was like, you know what? They never got the brochure before because that's not the special little window of people that our operators send to. And furthermore, we had this couple in Paris. They're not in their 20s or 30s, but they travel everywhere all the time and they never knew about my program. And now they've been with us like 5 times. They weren't getting the brochures because they're internationally based. So it really changes your, if you're concerned about getting new travelers to your program, email's the way to do it. You can reach them. This I love because we also now that we're emailing a lot, we've had an increase in our parents' travelers. And this parent said, you know, she's got 3 Cornellians in her, her children are all Cornellians. And she said, I've given to Cornell to my kids for years. Now it's time for me to give Cornell to myself. Yeah, I love that. That's awesome. And you know what? I know there are obstacles. We all have a small staff. I'm a staff of half of myself. And you know, we have the communications department, and you know, maybe you don't know how to use the platform or you don't have permission to do it. I know that. But if you can start small and throw 10 addresses into your BCC line and see what happens and write down the results, you have metrics to talk about with your vice president and your email team. You have stories to share. This is me at Cornell. This is me at my desk. And it's kind of rustic. You know, that's how I feel. I represent a program that has the least skin in the game. We don't take registrations. We don't send faculty. I'm, you know, not permitted to travel a lot because I have a lot of other responsibilities. But it can be done anyway. You know, this is an email we sent for our 3rd departure for Morocco this year. 3rd departure. We only planned 1. And now 72 people are going to get this experience. And it really makes me so happy. You know, once I went to the post office and I said, I want to buy stamps. And the guy behind the counter was like, do you want to see the decorative stamps? And I said, no, I'm just putting them on bills. It doesn't really matter. He was like, actually, it does matter. You know, postal workers, we appreciate and we need beauty, too. And I was like, it's Ithaca, so you hear this kind of thing a lot. But you know, I thought about it. I've never forgotten it. That happened like 15 years ago, but it stuck with me because I think what he was really saying is that when he's handling all these envelopes and boxes, he still wants to feel alive. And I think that's the key to good email. People want to feel alive. This is a little note I got from a grandparent recently. And I think they want to feel alive no matter how old they are. That's a key too. You know, sometimes we think, oh, our target demographic is 65, 75. They just need the details. But believe me, they enjoy the Super Bowl commercials too. And, you know, let me just tell you one more chapter of the story has to do with our alumni magazine. And this is important in case you feel like, oh, I have some email permissions, but I want more. I don't want anyone to take that away from me, no matter what kind of Jack Kerouac quotes I throw. I looked around and I said, what can I do at Cornell that will be helpful with my program? How can I collaborate with other programs? And so we have this magazine. It's a separate financial entity from Alumni Affairs, but of course we love it because it promotes our activities, et cetera. And like any print publication, they're struggling. They rely on subscriptions and advertising revenue to do business, to stay alive. So one day I said to one of my operators, I was like, hey, how do you feel about buying a print ad in the magazine? It's like the Vogue of Cornell, you know. I had this whole spiel, and the person was like, yeah, no, we don't get metrics from that. Not interested, we'll pass. So then I like sat there and I thought, I came back and I was like, hey, what if I give you an email? You buy an ad, you get the ad, it's awesome. And I'm gonna send the email, and here's the metrics. Here's the proof that my emails work. You know, I talked about Morocco and all the other departures that we had sold out and filled second departures for. We can now fill, we recently filled a tour in 3 days. And I heard that the operators team was sort of cheering, you know, go Cornell. So they watched the bookings come in. So anyway, this worked. The vendor bought the email. Or they bought the ad, they got the email, they were happy. And that first year I raised for the magazine $14,000 that they never knew was coming their way. The next year it was 26, and this year it's gonna crest over $41,000 for this struggling magazine. So that makes me happy. What is the secret? What's the it factor? You know, you could Google that, of course, and you might find, oh, the optimal send time for travel. Saturday at 2 p.m., write it down. You might do that, but the big important thing is just what Maya Angelou said, people are gonna forget what you do and what you say, but they're never gonna forget how you made them feel. And if you can go into your cubicle in your office, your kitchen, and cook up an email that has that special passion that each one of you has for travel, and your people, then when I get the email, I'm gonna feel like I'm at a campfire with my friends from school. And, you know, it's a good feeling. It's warm, drinking a beer, just feeling happy, happy. And then afterwards, you see the candles in the front, those are your bookings. But everybody in the back, those are the happy feelings that you created through your whole audience. So do that, send it to me. And I want to be on your list.
Thank you, Anna. That was fantastic. One thing I forgot to mention, we will have a little bit of time at the end for questions and answers. So just if you have a question, just jot it down and we'll make sure to capture it at the end. So next up, we have Jason Halal. He has over 12 years experience in writing, editing, project management, marketing, graphic design, digital media, and music production. He is currently the Associate Director of Marketing and Digital Content at Sierra Club Outings in Oakland, California, and previously worked in media relations / communications at Mental Health America in Washington, D.C. So, here you go, Jason.
All right, let's see if we can do this. Hey, everybody. It's very nice to see so many people interested in email marketing. This is my first ETC. And there's been a lot of different business models that I've been encountering that are very different than what the Sierra Club does. At times I kind of struggled to make sense of them, and I've been seeking other marketing people. And the last day or two I've started finding them. But it's really nice to see an entire room full of people with an interest in this kind of stuff. Because it's the bread and butter of what I do. And as you heard from Anna, this is also something that if you're not already doing, I really encourage you to do it. So today we're going to kind of look at one of the essential aspects of email marketing, and that's photos. So I want to start off with a really trite saying here that I'm sure everyone has heard. Has everyone heard this before? Yeah? Well, it's true. But we're going to go a little bit deeper than that today. We're going to try to talk, we're going to try to look at what actually makes a good photo and how you can use them in the emails you send to really grab people's attention. So before we get into that, though, I want to kind of just really quickly try to explain to you why we want to do this in the first place. So I want to make sure that you understand why it's important to identify high quality photos, right? So to do that, we're going to look at a study that Netflix conducted in 2016. And there's a whole lot of different conclusions that they came to. But the main one here is that looking at images not only prompted users to watch content, but accounted for 82% of their time spent browsing, okay? As opposed to just reading the text that was accompanying those titles. And this is the really critical one. In other words, the images mattered almost 4 times more than text, okay? So I think that in itself underscores the value of photos within an email marketing campaign or any other thing, but of course we're talking about email marketing today. And lastly, I just want to quickly read this last quote. This person from Netflix says, if you don't capture a member's attention within 90 seconds, he or she will most likely lose interest and move on to another activity. So that really, again, underscores why photos are absolutely essential. So, of course, this is true for email as well. And this is just a photo from the, this is a capture of the Sierra Club's email newsletter, The Explorer, which goes to a subset of the Sierra Club's broader membership. And we work really hard to cultivate a list of people who are explicitly interested in taking trips, who are explicitly interested in finding out about the offerings that we have. And this is just a screenshot from it, but you know, it's not too different from the email that Anna sends. But as you can see, you know, the what we call a hero image, this image right here, I mean, this is the star of the show. And if you don't capture someone's attention there, there's a really good chance they're not going to keep going. So again, I just want to really underscore that this is of utmost importance, and you'd be remiss to not really spend some time thinking about photos. So to kind of get us in the spirit of this, though, I want to look at some photo examples with you all, and I'm going to ask you to help me identify some qualities of these photos that you think are either good or bad, okay? Can we do that? All right, so here is example number one. And all these, I think all of these are taken on our trips, okay? So here we have a photo that I could have selected, or not. Does anyone want to tell me what they like or don't like about this photo? So you hear one person saying we can't see their faces very well. Body language. What about the body language? Yeah. This is one thing that may be a little bit harder to see, but these kids are all looking in one direction. These guys are looking towards the camera. Okay. And overall, it's just kind of a dark image, right? It's just a little hard to see what's going on. All right. So let's look at another one, kind of, its counterpart. All right. What do you like or not like about this image? All smiling, well lit. Scenery's behind them. Yeah, you can tell that they succeeded at something. That's really good. So that feeling is infectious, right? All right. Let's do another one or two. All right, what do you like or not like about this photo? It makes you wonder? What say more about that. Yeah. How about the colors? Washed out. All right. And how about this one? Much better. What do you like about this one? What do you like about this one that the previous one doesn't have? Color. Real perspective, right? You're seeing an entire landscape. You have a strong sense of what it's like to be there, not just this little speck in a tiny gray cave, right? It's inviting. All right. So just one more kind of example. And this is kind of a different kind of photo. You know, this is what we call like a detail shot or a close-up or something like that. What do you like or not like about this one?
Not much contrast.
Yeah. And there's just also a tremendous amount of stuff happening in here that is very distracting from the subject, which is this flower, right? Okay. And then comparatively, what do folks think about this one? The subject is dominant. We got strong colors. The subject is abundantly clear. You know exactly what you're looking at here, right? Okay, so enough of that. You get the picture. So now it's time to look at some of the lessons learned, right? So what can we gain from this brief exercise? Well, the first thing is that great photos are really colorful and they're really compelling. And I think you can see that clearly from any of the images that we looked at after looking at the ones we weren't so fond of. Secondly, really strong photos, they convey the feeling of a place that you're going to, or more importantly, they really convey that experience of being there in a way that telling someone about that place rarely can do, right? That kind of goes back to our trite saying at the beginning that a photo is worth 1,000 words. This one's kind of about the subject. So like, what are these photos capturing? Well, they may be capturing a landscape that you're going to be in. They may be honed in on a critter along the trail, or a detail of some rocks along the beach, or a flower. Or they may be depicting cultural interactions. You know, these are the kinds of things that really tell a story, that really grab people. And then this is another one I really like, which is participants in action. So we run a lot of backpack trips and volunteer vacations. So if you are trying to offer a very specific kind of experience like that, you want to see someone physically doing it. You know, maybe just showing them standing in front of a landscape isn't enough, but you really want to illustrate what that experience, what that activity looks like. And then also just frankly, just really looking happy in their surroundings goes a super long way. And then finally, this makes you want to take a trip, right? So if you're looking at these photos and you feel really excited by what you're seeing, you want to be there. This is a motivation factor. This is something that's going to actually drive you from the loose concept of taking a trip to pressing that book now button. So the thing that's really going to motivate you to go and start the plan. So this is just another way of stating what we already looked at, and I'm offering this mostly as kind of a tool in the future. So if you're considering a photo for an email or otherwise, this is a series of questions that you could ask yourself to really determine whether it's got what is going to cut through the noise, right? Because as we've heard, we live in this really, really fast, noisy, kind of fast-paced world. And if we want to distinguish our trips or our experiences from all that other stuff that's out there, we really need to provide compelling material. And photos are, again, the most straightforward, efficient way of doing that. So where do you get photos, right? So this is something that I think a lot of people are probably asking themselves. Where are we actually going to find these photos? And there's some big differences in the ways that we can do that. But essentially, I want to say one thing, which is you don't have to be a pro photographer, okay? I know a lot of people probably feel terrified about the idea of identifying photos. You probably don't feel terribly secure unless you're one of the few amateur photographers out there. You probably don't feel terribly secure in your ability to actually take these photos yourselves, right? But the essential thing is really not about being able to take those photos. It's about knowing what to look for, right? So it's about knowing where to find photos and knowing how to identify which ones are really high quality and which ones are just kind of blah, okay? So we have two different options for finding photos. The first one is stock photos, which have their pros and cons, and we'll get into that in a moment. And then the second one is just everything else, right? And this is mostly photos that's taken by a leader or one of the guests on your trips, or a concessionaire that you work with, right? So what are stock photos and why would we maybe want to use them, right? So some of the pros are that we can get these really, really detailed, high-resolution images that were taken on excellent equipment that they're going to provide you with this massive file. And with that file, we can do a lot of different things. So we can size it down and make it tiny, or we could really put it on a billboard and we can make it huge and really advertise the hell out of it because there's a tremendous amount of detail in there. It's a very rich image. We can also do the same kind of thing with close-up images, right? So if there's a nature photographer that you like working with, this person could take a photo of a deer and really capture all of the intricate details in it, right? Really kind of bring the wildlife on that trip to life. The cons, though, are that sometimes they can feel really lifeless. They can feel cheesy. We've all seen an image that feels like a stock image, right? And that's something that you really want to be very careful of. You don't want to provide something that looks too generic or out of the box. In addition to that, they also cost money, and that's obviously a consideration. And we'll look in a moment at some free or low-cost options. And then finally, it can also be a little bit of work sometimes. Some photographers are very specific about where they want you to use these images. So perhaps you've bought the rights to use it on your website, but you haven't paid for rights to use it in print. Or you've done one, or you've done the other thing. And sometimes it may require a little bit of time to make sure you can use it in all the appropriate places that you want to, okay? Now, here's some ways that you can find these, and I don't use a lot of free images personally, but some of the, I don't recall who, but one of the ladies on our panel the other day was giving me some good suggestions, and I looked up a few of our own, and these are all places where you can score some free, royalty-free, whatever it is, images that... Again, you'll have a lot of options. You'll also be pushed to purchase some by some advertisers, but these are all viable options worth looking at, and some of my colleagues here have used them to great success. I also like some of these companies here. I'm sorry, that first one should say iStock, little I in front. iStock, Tandem, and Superstock. Now, these are not free, but they have a lot of images. They have really high quality images, and I'm consistently impressed with their offerings, and we use them pretty regularly. So now we're going to talk about the other side of that coin, which is non-stock photos, okay? And to me, this is probably a little bit more important because it really involves your photo critiquing skills in a more detailed way. You're not so much looking at images that have been taken by pros or semi-pros. You're looking at images that were taken by either yourself or someone like yourself, one of the guests on your trips, right? So you're going to see a lot more variance in quality. The pros here is that, as I said, they really bring the trip experience to life. They're showing real people on your trips, not some stock image, but real people from these experiences with smiles on their faces. And I just can't tell you how valuable that is. I mean, this is what I really look for in the images that I toil to collect. And I have massive folders of all these damn images, and I'm constantly spending time going through them. But what I'm seeking is this holy grail image, of which, you know, we come up with a lot of them, of just people simply having a really good time where they're at, right? And there's no replacement for that. There's absolutely no replacement for a true image of someone really feeling that experience, okay? The cons are, as I said, it can be kind of difficult to gather. You may have to be regularly reminding people like, hey, I need you to take photos on your trips because this is really important to the work we do. If you're leading a trip and you want that trip to go, it's really important that you help me by capturing images from there that really bring it to life. And then again, as I said, it can take a bit of time to kind of sift through the ones that are good from the not so good, or sometimes the bad ones. But don't tell that to my leaders, because we need to be very sensitive about that and remind them that they all take good photos. So where to find them? So I think your leaders are always a really excellent source. And again, some of them are going to take better photos than others. But you want them to be keeping you in the loop and sending you images. If your guests, if you spend a lot of time interacting with your guests, you'll find some people who take trips with you who are excellent amateur photographers, or perhaps even pro photographers. And these are people that you want to really make sure that you're in touch with. We offer for the guests on our trips to donate photos. We also offer to pay them for photos. But again, you know, they have to be really high quality photos. So they have to be worth the money that we invest in them. But a lot of people are frankly just so thrilled to have their image printed in our magazine or in our brochures online that money is not really a consideration for them. So, I mean, this is a real opportunity for them to feel like they're contributing something, they're giving back to the program that they've had such a good time on. And then finally, you can always look for through land agencies and other kinds of concessionaires, tourism bureaus that you may be working with. How am I doing on time, by the way? Close to done? Okay. So I just quickly want to just illustrate a concept about photo quality. So we're not going to get into the nitty-gritty here because it can get a little bit complicated, but I just want to make sure that you understand that if you're finding photos, you need high-quality photos. We can't get photos that look that don't look like they are professionally taken, right? So that doesn't mean that everything has to be crystal clear, but it does mean that it can't look like this, right? So as you can see on the right side, this is a high resolution photo. And all that means is this is an image that has a lot of data in it, right? So it's actually a larger file. So this image may be, I don't know, 1 or 2 megabytes. Whereas this one that we're looking at on the left is, you know, perhaps 100 kilobytes, right? So that's a much smaller file, and that just means that it has less content in it. So we cannot be publishing photos that look like this. This is what we call being pixelated. That means there's very little information in there. We can't be doing that. That will not help anyone's travel program, okay? So just make sure that you're finding always the biggest size images. And again, this is really not something that we need to spend a lot of time on, but you're essentially looking for the rawest version of that image. So when someone takes a photo on their camera, you want to be capturing, you want to be getting exactly what they took, right? You don't want to be getting some third or fourth hand-me-down that's been cropped and, you know, made lower quality. You want the highest, most original photo you can get. And we can always scale those big images down, right, to make them adaptable in emails, or we can make them bigger as long as that information is there. And then finally, I just want to tell you a couple quick tools that are always really useful for either cropping images or making some modest color corrections. These are all free. They're not Photoshop. Photoshop is a really intense and overwhelming program that, unless you're really getting involved, I don't recommend starting with. And these are all things that will allow you to do some really basic stuff, okay? So that's it. Congratulations. You're all photo masters now.
Thank you, Jason. That was very informative. We have next Michelle Bell. Michelle's been in the affinity market for more than 15 years. She's managed the Arkansas travel programs for 12 years and has also worked for a supplier. She is now with the National World War II Museum Travel Program. Michelle?
Good morning, everybody. I'm not sure why they put me last. Anna was so engaging that we should really wrap up with her presentation, but I'm going to try to wrap it up for everybody. First, let me say that we are an interesting organization. We are both an affinity organization and an operator. And I struggled a little bit when they asked me to participate in this presentation because we don't want it to be a sales pitch. So I want to be clear that in the portion of this that I'm showing what we do for our partners, I really am not intending this to be anything like a sales pitch. I just want to show you what's available out there and help you put your own stuff together and help you know what to ask your operators for if you're not already getting those kinds of things. So like I said, we are a hybrid. We have a membership and a donor program ourselves. We have various level of memberships. We do print and email promotions. We're also a program operator for our affinity partners. So we provide the print and electronic promotional material like you get from all your operators. And then we also provide additional assistance on request. We have an internal marketing team that works on our affinity program for us, our affinity travel, sorry, on our own travel, let me be clear. And then we have a designer that we contract to do our brochures and our customized promotions for the affinity programs. We do general emails to our membership. This is an example of a, unfortunately, and there's no one from our marketing department here, so I can say this. This is an example of what I would say is not, has not been an effective campaign for us. This goes to our Patriot Circle patrons. And you'll see that they have to go through all of this other stuff in order to get down to the travel program. We found that it's not highly effective for us, but from my experience at Arkansas, that was also what I was getting at Arkansas, was people were sending out these emails to donors and members and life members, and travel was getting stuck way down at the bottom, and we weren't getting anything from it. And the feedback that I was getting was, well, it's not effective to do emails because we're sending these things and nobody's clicking on it. Well, it's way down at the bottom and they're tired by the time they got there. So that's why I thought it wasn't effective. What we also do is targeted emails. We don't, in other emails that we have, we do what Jason is suggesting and what Anna has suggested, and we do some really lovely photos at the top. This happens to be about 75th anniversary, so that's where that one did. And we do a very short blurb. Sometimes they let me write it. This one is not the case. Sometimes they let me write it, and I try to get just a little historical blurb or something interesting that happened during the particular focus of the trip. And then we do, just like Anna was talking about, a little click to get to the actual page. I'm going to try to hurry up because I want you guys to be able to ask questions. We do, obviously, as everybody probably does, links to the travel program, the fully built out page that gives itineraries. We can book online. So we give itineraries, lots of beautiful photos. Sorry, I'm not as tech savvy either as Jason. we do an overview of the tour, just the basic things. And we also do what I have found very helpful. When we have an author or a historian on a program, we do video introductions from the historian or the author that is with us. We try to get the personality of the historian or the author that is traveling with us in the video. Alexandra is a professor. She's a wonderful, wonderful lady, but she's also very formal. And so you'll see a contrast in a moment with another author that we use quite a bit. For our partner marketing, we do probably what all of the other operators in here do. We provide the 50, 100, and 150 word historical copy. At Arkansas, I used to write a lot of my own content. Obviously, where I work now, the majority of the stuff that is told on our tours and learned on our tours, I have no idea about. So I let our historians write the content, and then I pretty it up. So we provide the content that is written by the historians for you guys to pretty up on your own. We also, this is really important, I think, when it comes to photos like Jason is talking about. We not only provide, we not only include photos from today, we include archival photos, which I've found really helpful in both cultural tours and in more historical tours. I think it provides more of a connection between what you're learning on the tour, what happened then, and what you're actually seeing today. This is what it used to look like. This is what it looks like today. Obviously, we do online brochures. We provide maps, which when I was at Arkansas, I always wanted a map. I always wanted at the bottom of my emails, I always wanted a little map so people could see exactly where they were going. Because I found a lot of people who were interested in travel have heard of these places, but don't have it on a map in their head. And I found that helpful, surprisingly helpful in a lot of cases. Another thing that if you have a professor that's going from your university on a tour, ask your operator, ask if they can do a video that they customize for you that pairs you with that expert as well as the trip. Another thing that, sorry, it's not working. There we go. This one will work. We can, some operators can do co-branded landing pages. I know AHI does this, and there's several others that do that. I think more and more operators are moving in this direction. This happens to be a trip with the American Legion, and we are moving in a direction where we can offer those landing pages where people can book on site. I don't remember, Martin, does AHI, can AHI book on the site? Perfect. Yeah, I think a lot of people are moving that way, and as more planners get savvy with that and the travelers get savvy with that, I think it's important to keep asking us, can you do this, can you do this, because I think a lot of travelers are really starting to like having that option. Sorry, I'm trying to rush through so you have time for questions. So co-branded landing pages, we have also been requested from some of our partners to do banner ads that they can put on their website. We've also had one partner that requested a mobile-friendly ad. So I think the more that planners encourage their operators to make these things available, the more that we will be pushed to innovate and have new things available for all of your travelers who are looking for different ways to connect with you. So that's my, I tried to rush. I hope I gave you enough time. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate it.
Great, so we do have time for questions, so I'm gonna just run around and we'll have our folks stand up probably to ask questions.
Yes, hi, Chris Bensley from Holbrook Travel, and I'm curious about list development, because you gave the story, Anna, about how you wanted to send it out to the entire file. I would imagine that they're very protective of it, so I'm curious what organizations are doing to try to segment and qualify people just for travel, so you have a sublist.
Sure, that's a good question. So I've been able to secure one per month to our largest audience, which includes alumni, parents, and friends. And from that, I just extract everyone who's clicked through, and I add them to my target list, which is past travelers and people who have asked to be on the list. So over the years, I've seen that list grow. Right now, it's almost to 30,000. And I use that list every week. And I target adding to it. For instance, if I want a trip to be shared with parents, I'll grab the parent population and add them to my target. Or if I'm thinking about our young alumni tour, I'm not even using our target, I'm just using the young alumni segment. So yeah, you can be really careful about how you build your list.
Yeah, I would just say that it's not enough to just have an email list, right? But you need to constantly be finding ways to build it. And so, as Anna said, you know, we have all of our past travelers automatically get added to a list. But in addition to that, we have Explore sign-up box on our homepage and a number of different places. And so we're constantly pushing that. We also do some online advertising, specifically directed at people who are not familiar with our program, to try to get in front of them. And the main ask is to sign up for our newsletter. So yeah, I think email acquisition, there's a lot of different ways that you could slice and dice that, but ultimately you're constantly trying to find new ways to get new people onto your list and also increase the open rate or the action rate that takes place within any given email.
On the partner side, we just provide the content and allow the planners to put together their own email, but we also provide assistance with that if they need customized banners, like I mentioned before, or something like that. On our own membership side, we send to our entire membership. It's not as large as Cornell's or many of your organizations. And so for our museum-specific programs, we do send to our entire membership.
Hi, this is Suze from UCLA. I was wondering, how many emails do you send where you don't get too many unsubscriptions or manage with other departments at your school so you're not sending too much?
So like I said, I send one big email every month. And at this point, all of my emails are getting bookings. You'll know if a trip has traction, destination and time when you're offering it, if it obviously you'll get more bookings. So some of my tours I will email twice. Maybe it goes to the larger audience and then I send a target in a little while with all of the click-throughs especially added to that. And as I mentioned with the magazine, that kind of arrangement, if you can find it, gives you leverage to keep sending your emails. You want to be helpful to some area that needs, and then when they come knocking on your door, and you can say, hey, you know, you can't hurt the magazine by taking away my emails. So it's a constant work in progress. It's never easy, but it's so worth it.
Yeah, I only send one email a month. And that's in large part because Sierra Club members are frankly bombarded with emails, and I don't want to be a source of stress. I want to be something they look forward to, right? So they can generally count on receiving it in the middle of the month, especially when there's new trips to be announced. But it's interesting because I was speaking with a colleague in our digital strategies department who do a lot of emails and such, and there's times of the year when they are sending for a certain campaign, like this Adopt a Wild Animal concept, which is essentially you're spending money to protect a specific place, like the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, right? They will send an email every single day of the week, like maybe total of 10 days in a row at the end of the year, because that's the biggest gift giving time of the year. And they can see metrics that show them that yes, there are people who unsubscribe, but every time they ask for more, they get more, right? So that is a dynamic that exists within my organization. And perhaps I should be a little more aggressive, but I also really want to protect my people. You know, I feel like I have my own list of people that have said, I want to take trips with you and I want to learn about this information, but I don't want you to abuse that, right? So I'm constantly trying to like instill some kind of set of expectations that you will get you will get a modest amount of information from me, but I am not going to bombard you, right?
Yeah. I just wanted to add that I think if your email is really from your organization, that it has a different appeal. We used to partner with credit card companies because, as you know, Alumni Affairs, you can make a sort of percentage on every transaction. We don't do that kind of thing anymore. We don't partner with Liberty Mutual and get a discount for our alumni. Some people don't, they're upset that they don't get the discount, but the trade-off is companies like that are requiring you to send these really huge emails packed with compliance information and all this jargon, and it's really off-putting to the majority. So we protect our list in that way, and I've been able to have a voice at that table, which has helped me to say, hey, you know, if it feels like it's organic to Cornell, it resonates with our audience in a particular way, and it's more likely to be okay.
Leanne Quirk with the University of Oklahoma. I just wondered if the panel had any tips on subject lines, wording. Have you experimented with different links? You know, some long, short. You know, just what I just wanted to see what you guys thought about that.
When our marketing department does the emails, it's typically the title of the trip, which I haven't found to be that helpful. So when they let me write the emails or one of the others on our team, we typically do something a little more engaging than just the name of the trip. It's, you know, journey back to the Battle of the Bulge, whatever it may be. But it typically has a call to action in it, which I think is important rather than just saying, you know, Tuscany villages or whatever it may be. We always use a call to action.
And I think that, I mean, I don't spend a lot of time testing various subject lines, and I have a friend who used to work for The Gap, and I mean, they'd have this stuff down to a science, and it's honestly very cynical how specific they can get and know exactly what's going to work. But, you know, I would actually say that first of all, short and pithy is always your best friend, right? Whether it's the subject line, whether it's the content of the email, let the photos do the talking. You're just adding a little bit more context, and then you're doing a call to action, right? So I think that is always going to be your friend. My only other point was just that that, you know, sometimes think about your language like the photos, right? Like, make it colorful, make it exciting. But, you know, you can communicate a lot of different things with a very modest amount of words. But if you want to get the most bang for your buck, like, make it colorful language that evokes something.
Sorry. And I meant to say something about what Anna mentioned earlier about making the emails funny, no matter what your age demographic is. The most successful email I ever sent was when I was at Arkansas, and I was promoting a Greece trip by talking about the donkey that tried to kill me on Santorini. So that definitely works.
One thing I do is subscribe to a lot of email newsletters, and I steal. And you can do this because, you know, why not? So Birchbox, everything that millennials love is funny and catchy and stylish. So I subscribe to all of them. I keep them in a folder and I go in. One of my favorite subject line was, your passport called, it wants this stamp. And that was a little long, but people opened it up. So
I think we have time for sneak in one more question here.
Yeah, say if you have a group photo that you've taken on any particular trip, how do you get permission from each of the individuals in the photo to kind of put it into an email or a brochure or something? How do you go about that?
Well, when you sign up for our trips, mm-hmm. you're essentially automatically consenting to have your image taken unless you tell us otherwise, and no one really ever does that. So that's kind of our catch-all, at least with the images that are taken on our trips as opposed to a stock photo. But the only other thing, the only place where we have to be really, really careful is with images of children. So if there's a family trip that we run. It's not enough to just have someone sign up. They need to explicitly, the guardians, the parent or guardian has to explicitly sign off on that kid's photo being taken. But that's a totally good question, and it's something you have to be careful with if you're not doing the thing that we do that already gives you kind of built-in permission.
We also mention it on our trips. So the tour manager of the trip at the very beginning, if we're taking photos, doing any Facebook promotions, anything like that during the trip, the tour manager will say at the very first day, we are taking some photos, we're taking some videos. If you'd like to be interviewed, if you don't want to be interviewed or don't want your picture, please tell us now. So we give them the opportunity to say, I don't want you to use my picture on Facebook.
Great. Well, I'm sure our panelists would have some time after if you guys had more questions that you'd want to ask after we wrap up here. But thank you very much. Hopefully you found it all very interesting. Please remember to hand in your surveys. And thank you to our panelists.
Please remember to fill out your evaluations. And if you don't have an evaluation form to fill out, just write out your thoughts on a piece of paper. Turn it in.
Thank you.
And is this on? Please remember to leave your evaluations at the door. Thank you.
Okay. How do I get one? Yeah.